noticed that the finches' beaks on each island were marvelously adapted for exploiting local resources. That on one island beaks were sturdy and short and good for cracking nuts, while on the next island beaks were perhaps long and thin and well suited for winkling food out of crevices. And it was this that set him to thinking that perhaps the birds had not been created this way, but had in a sense created themselves. In fact, the birds had created themselves, but it wasn't Darwin who noticed it. At the time of the Beagle voyage, Darwin was fresh out of college and not yet an accomplished naturalist, and so failed to see that the Galapagos birds were all of a type. It was his friend, the ornithologist John Gould, who realized that what Darwin had found was lots of finches with different talents. Unfortunately, in his inexperience, Darwin had not noted which birds came from which islands. He had made a similar error with tortoises. It took years to sort the muddles out. Because of these oversights and the need to sort through crates and crates of other beagle specimens, it wasn't until 1842, 6 years after his return to England, that Darwin finally began to sketch out the rudiments of his new theory. These he expanded into a 230-page sketch 2 years later. And then he did an extraordinary thing. He put his notes away and for the next decade and a half busied himself with other matters. He fathered 10 children, devoted nearly 8 years to writing an exhaustive opus on barnacles. "I hate a barnacle as no man ever did before," he sighed understandably upon the work's conclusion, and fell prey to strange disorders that left him chronically listless, faint, and flurried, as he put it. The symptoms nearly always included a terrible nausea, and generally also incorporated palpitations, migraines, exhaustion, trembling, spots before the eyes, shortness of breath, swimming of the head, and, not surprisingly, depression. The cause of the illness has never been established, but the most romantic and perhaps likely of the many suggested possibilities is that he suffered from Chagas' disease, a lingering tropical malady that he could have acquired from the bite of a benchuga bug in South America. A more prosaic explanation is that his condition was psychosomatic. In either case, the misery was not. Often, he could work for no more than 20 minutes at a stretch, sometimes not that. Much of the rest of his time was devoted to a series of increasingly desperate treatments, icy plunge baths, dowsings in vinegar, draping himself with electric chains that subjected him to small jolts of current. He became something of a hermit, seldom leaving his home in Kent, Down House. One of his first acts upon moving to the house was to erect a mirror outside his study window so that he could identify and, if necessary, avoid callers. Darwin kept his theory to himself because he well knew the storm it would cause. In 1844, the year he locked his notes away, a book called Vestiges of the Natural History of Creation roused much of the thinking world to fury by suggesting that humans might have evolved from lesser primates without the assistance of a divine creator. Anticipating the outcry, the author had taken careful steps to conceal his identity, which he kept a secret from even his closest friends for the next 40 years. Some wondered if Darwin himself might be the author. Others suspected Prince Albert. In fact, the author was a successful and generally unassuming Scottish publisher named Robert Chambers, whose reluctance to reveal himself had a practical dimension as well as a personal one. His firm was a leading publisher of Bibles. Vestiges was warmly blasted from pulpits throughout Britain and far beyond, but also attracted a good deal of more scholarly ire. The Edinburgh Review devoted nearly an entire issue, 85 pages, to pulling it to pieces. Even T.H. Huxley, a believer in evolution, attacked the book with some venom, unaware that the author was a friend. Darwin was one of the few to guess correctly. He happened to be visiting Chambers one day when an advance copy of the 6th edition of Vestiges was delivered. The keenness with which Chambers checked the revisions was something of a giveaway, though it appears the two men did not discuss it. Darwin's manuscript might have remained locked away till his death, but for an alarming blow that arrived from the Far East in the early summer of 1858, in the form of a packet containing a friendly letter from a young naturalist named Alfred Russel Wallace, and the draft of a paper, on the tendency of varieties to depart indefinitely.